So in the blue book that's on your stand, you'll find the Sri Ishapanishad on the bubblegum colored tab. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Ishavasyam Midang Sarvam Yatkincha Jagatyam Jagat Tena Tyaktena Bunjita Magradakasya Svidhanam Kurvaneveha Karmani Jijivishekshatam Samaha Evam Tvai Nanyate Tosti Na Karma Lipyate Nare Asurya Namate Loka Antena Tamasavritaha Vritya Bigachchanti Ye ke chatmahano janaha Ane jare kam manaso javiyo Naina devap nuvam purvanarshad Tadhavato jnana teti tishtad Tasmina po matarishva dadati Tadejati tannaijati Tadure tadvantike Tarantarasya sarvasya Taru sarvasyasya bhayataha Yastu sarvani bhutani Atmani vanupashyati Sarva bhuteshu chatmanam Tato na vijagupsate Yasmin sarvani bhutani Atmaivad bhut vijanataha Tatra ko mahakashoka Ekadvam anupashyataha Saparya chakshukram akayam avranam Asnaviram shudham apapavidham Kavir manishi pariyabhuswayam bhur Yatat yatyatortan vyadadash chasvati bhyasamabhyaha Andan tamak pravishanti Ye vidyam upasate Tato bhuya ivate tamo Ya uvidya yamrataha Anyadeva hur vidyaya Anyada hur avidyaya Iti shushrumatiranam Yenastad vichachakshire vidyam cha yas Tadvedo bhayam saha Avidya yamrutum tirtva Vidya yamratum ashnute Antam tamak pravishanti Ye sambuti mupasate Tato puya ivate tamo Ya u sambut yamrataha Anya devahu sambhavad Anya rahura sambhavad Iti shushru madhiranam Yenastad vijachakshire Sambhutiṃ ca vināśaṃ ca yastad vedo bhayam saha vināśena mṛtyum tirtva sambhutyam mṛtyum aśnute hiranmayena patrena satyasya pihitam mukham tatvam puṣana bhavrenu satyadharmaya drishteye puṣane karṣeyama surya prajapatya Vyuharasmin samuha Tejo yate rupam kalyanatamam Tate pashami yosavasau purusho masmi Vayura nilam amratam Atedam basmantam shariram Om kratosmara kratam smara Kratosmara kratam smara Agne naya supataraya asman Vishvani deva vayunani vidvan Yuyodhyasmaj juharana meno Bhuishtam tenama uktim vidhema And the translations we'll read together. The personality of Godhead is perfect and complete. And because he is completely perfect, all emanations from him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. Whatever is produced a complete whole is also complete in itself. Because he is the complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. One may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in that way, for that sort of work will not bind him to the law of karma. There is no alternative to this way for man. The skill of the soul, whoever he may be, must enter to the planets known as the worlds of the faithless, full of darkness and ignorance. Although fixed in his abode, the personality of Godhead is swifter than the mind and can overcome all others running. The powerful demigods cannot approach him. Although in one place he controls those who supply the air and rain, he surpasses all in excellence. The Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. He is far away, but he is very near as well. He is within everything, and yet he is outside of everything. He who sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord, who sees all entities as his parts and parcels, and who sees the Supreme Lord within everything, never hates anything nor any being. Sees spiritual sparks in quality one with the Lord, becomes a true knower of things. What then can be illusion or anxiety for him? Must factually know the greatest of all Godhead, who is unembodied, omniscient, beyond reproach, without veins, pure and uncontaminated, the self-sufficient philosopher who has been fulfilling everyone's desires since time immemorial. He shall enter the darkest region of ignorance. Worse still are those engaged in the culture of so-called knowledge. To explain that one result is derived from the culture of knowledge and that a different result is obtained from the culture of nescience. Only one who can learn the process of nescience and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. Those engaged in the worship of demigods enter to the darkest region of ignorance, and still more so to the worshippers of the impersonal absolute. It is said that one result is obtained by worshipping the supreme cause of all causes, and then another result is obtained by worshipping that which is not supreme. All this is heard from the undisturbed authorities who clearly explained it. One should know perfectly the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna and his transcendental name, form, qualities, and pastimes, as well as the temporary material creation with its temporary demigods, men, and animals. When one knows these, he surpasses death and the ephemeral cosmic manifestation with it. And in the eternal kingdom of God, he enjoys his eternal life of bliss and knowledge. O my Lord, sustainer of all that lives, your real face is covered by your dazzling effulgence. Kindly remove that covering and exhibit yourself to your pure devotee. O my Lord, O primeval philosopher, maintainer of the universe, O regulating principle, destination of the pure devotees, well-wisher of the progenitors of mankind, please remove the effulgence of your transcendental rays so that I can see your form of bliss. You are the eternal supreme personality of Godhead, like unto the sun, as am I. Let this temporary body be burnt to ashes, and let the air of life be merged with the totality of air. Now, O my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices, and because you are the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I have done for you. O my Lord, as powerful as fire, O omnipotent one, now I offer you all obeisances falling on the ground at your feet. O my Lord, please lead me on the right path to reach you. Since you know all I have done in the past, please free me from the reactions to past sins, so there will be no hindrance to my progress. So we're continuing the reading on Mantra 1, Chapter 17. And part of the project for reading the Isha Upanishad is to memorize the verses here. So we've worked on Mantra 1 a little bit. We're talking about this particular mantra being the solution to all problems. Just by meditating on this mantra and applying the principle, the Ishavasya principle, that everything belongs to Krishna, and that I'll accept only those things which are set aside as my quota. In this verse, which of the words, the Sanskrit words, indicate things that are set aside as one's quota? Could somebody turn on Badahari Prabhu's light? Okay, thank you. Sorry about that. That didn't come out. Well, maybe it's not. I don't know. Thank you, Hansapriya. So which words in this verse? Ishavasya midam sarvam yat kincha jagatyam jagat tena tyaktena punjita magrita kasya swidhanam. Tyaktena punjita means set apart quota. So let's talk about this set apart quota a little bit. It's a very interesting thing, because the Lord has filled up the universe with food and money and everything else and medicine, but you can only get it according to your quota, right? This word tyakva, like tyakva turna mashesha mandalapati shreinim sada tuchavat. The Goswamis, they set aside aristocracy as insignificant. Tuchavat, set it aside. So what does this mean about a set-aside quota? Let's talk a little bit about it, how different living beings have a set-aside quota. If we can quote some Shastra, or if you have some point to make about how we have a set-aside quota, then let's hear it. Any ideas? You can give some supporting Shastra. Or just an observation of how things are set aside as our quota. Or if you have an argument with this verse, then you can give the opposing argument and we'll try to defeat you. Badahari Prabhu, you had, and then Kishore. Sorry, it's not on.
Prabhupada gives the example that different animals are given a quota. Just like for a tiger, it's okay to eat meat, it's his quota. But other living entities don't. So they have their quota. I think it extends that to human beings also. We have our allotted. It's interesting, even in the Bible, it says that the quota for human beings is not meat.
Hmm.
So that's one example.
So it's a natural, you're saying it's a natural law that there's certain types of food that are meant for certain living entities. That's their quota. Okay.
Yeah.
Kishore, you're going to say? Thank you.
On similar lines, Prabhupada also says for elephants, at one go it eats a lot of food, like a lot of trees, or just uproots them and then eats. So in Africa you find hundreds of thousands of elephants in the forest. So each of them is getting proper food, its own quota. Mm. So Krishna is actually giving the quota to each one, whatever they require. So the other point was, for the animals who are living in the natural living in the forest, the quota is working perfectly. There is no disturbance. The quota is set aside. But human beings, being more intelligent, they misuse their free will and try to encroach on others' quota. That's when the system is disturbed, the natural system. That's when there is a, just like when your body is having a imbalance of these three basic elements, there is a problem, there is a disease. Similarly, in the body of the material nature, if there is an imbalance created by this over-intelligence or misuse of over-intelligence, there will be a chaos.
Mm. Thank you very much. Nice points. Bana has a point.
Something that came to mind...
A little closer.
Something that came to mind when I was reading... we were reading Bhagavad Gita up at the house with Bhakti Lee on 7th chapter, and it says this point here that everything in the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. And that is, you know, accepting that point, then one has to accept that one has, you know, one's quota and should be satisfied with that. There's an aphorism in the Vedas that Prabhupada quotes in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, saying that if the living entities were independent and all-pervading, like the Lord, then they would not be subject to the control of the Lord. But if it's understood that the living entities are actually, you know, minute living beings, and therefore they are under the control of the Lord, and so they are subject to the control of the Lord, and therefore then automatically one has to understand that I have limitations, and, you know, I have to be satisfied with, you know, understand that the Lord is controlling and owning everything, and I have to be satisfied with what my particular quota is. And therefore, to understand what that is also, one has to understand, you know, in relationship with the Lord. Right?
Yes.
And without understanding really our relationship with the Lord, how do we know what our quota is? I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, you said that we understand the Ishavasya spirit, that Krishna is controlling and controls and owns everything, right? And we're not independent, and therefore we're being provided. Nityo nityanam, chetanas chetananam, eko bahunam, yovididhati kaman. One can realize that I'm not independent in sustaining myself, and everything's coming from Krishna. That much I understood. Any other point? Yes.
Well, just in relation to the...
It's on.
Just the modern world, we see that 2/3 of the American population, and also it's pretty close in Europe, are overweight, actually obese. And meanwhile... A disproportion, you know, on the other side, other countries, you know, that many number of children are starving to death and going to, you know, dying every night. 27,000 children every night are dying of starvation and malnutrition. And it's just, it's really like, we were just talking about this last night, it's so apparent that by taking more than one's quota, how it not only... is ruining people's health and their well-being, but it's directly affecting other people on the planet. And it's interesting also, I heard of a business associate today who lost millions of dollars recently, and how stressed out she was about it. And I thought, of all the different people that I'm hearing about that are losing their fortunes in the stock market and in their real estate and all of that, and it's like, but... It's just numbers on papers and slips of paper in banks and stock. You know, none of it's real. It's the artificial wealth that has been created and is also stolen from the corruption. It's not real. None of these people are going without food. None of these people are actually going without the necessities of life. And how this artificial civilization has created this amazing levels of anxiety that have nothing to do with who we are, what this life is for, or the purpose of life. And it's just interesting. It's almost like you know, watching a TV show or reading a novel. It really doesn't have much to do with real life. But yet we've somehow or other, due to falsely identifying with this body, we accept this false civilization as very real and very important. So... Anytime I hear this verse in the Ishapanishad, I think about that, how there's one time Srila Prabhupada said that the only time food is wasted is when you overeat. Hmm. Because the food anywhere else distributed, there will always be living entities that eat it.
How interesting.
So.
Thank you. Nice points. Topical, too. One point that occurred to me while you were saying that, Prabhupada puts very simply how if a rich man, he may have millions of dollars. You were saying how wealth is artificial. He may have millions of dollars, but still, if his capacity is to only be able to eat four chapatis, it doesn't matter if he has a million or $1 billion, he can still only eat four chapatis. And therefore, that's his quota. And it doesn't help him to be more wealthy. I saw that Ted Turner, he owns a lot of Montana. He's 1 million acres of Montana, and he's sort of a disgruntled old man now. He drives around and looks at it. And it's, you know, it's further than the eye can see. Obviously, he can fly over it. He can look at it, but he can't really enjoy it. He doesn't even have a spouse anymore, I don't think. And he's sort of a little nutty. But very rich. But still, his quota comes down to, you know, he sleeps in the same 6 feet of space at night that everybody else does, and he can eat, you know, the handful of food that he can eat every day. So his quota is, and is, of what he can enjoy is actually limited to that. It can't take more. As Vamandev said when he begged for 3 paces of land from Bali Maharaj. Bali said, "Ask for more. I'm an emperor. I can give you anything." And his reply was that if I'm not satisfied with 3 paces of land, I won't be satisfied with anything you give me. Because life is very simple, actually. You don't need that much, actually, to become happy. But it has become artificial. Idea of getting more and more and more and more. As someone was just saying to me this morning about how now it turns out that the entire economy was one big Ponzi scheme, actually. And really not based on anything real. And people are sort of realizing that now, and therefore it was always based on consuming more. You always had to expand. That's what she was saying. It was my sister. She was telling me, yeah, the whole economy is based on consumption every year. It's like you have to consume more in order to keep the whole scheme going. Otherwise, it'll just tumble back on itself, basically, which is very artificial. If you live simply and if you don't overextend yourself, then you don't have a lot to lose either. A more natural, peaceful kind of life. Yes, Hansa Priya.
I was also wondering that
it could be satisfied with the portion what he said. Turn it on. Turn it on again. There you go.
I was wondering that if we could really come to the realization of be satisfied in the portion we have or whatever is set aside for us, it will also... I was thinking it would also help me to come out of the circle or loop of the hankering and lamentation.
Hmm. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, yadrichcha labha santushto. And this word yadrichcha means things that come naturally of their own accord. And labha means gain, of course, and santushto means to be satisfied. So he advises Arjuna, be satisfied with gain that comes of its own accord. And then, of course, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada Muni says that we get a certain amount of happiness and distress according to our past karma anyway. And even if you try to adjust it, that you'll end up with the same equation. And knowing that, and knowing that things will come of their own accord, creates a steady, peaceful state of mind that the Lord's providing anyway, and whatever's going to come is going to come. And therefore, there's no need to endeavor in an extraordinary way to try to collect more. Because, first of all, you can't do that much. You can't enjoy it anyway. You're going to get a certain quota anyway of happiness and distress according to what you deserve, right? Comes naturally. On the other hand, if the verse says, tasyaiva hetu prayateta kovido na labiteya ramatam udar upariyada, that if you endeavor on the other side for spiritual advancement, then you can increase on that side. On the material side, you're not going to get more than you deserve from your momentum from your last life's karma. But if you endeavor on the spiritual side, there's no real limit to how much you can advance. So he says you should put your energy in that direction as much as possible. The other thing's a waste of time. Prabhupada once told a couple of businessmen who came to visit him that the endeavor for material life is just like the man invests in the stock market in the morning and gets a hot tip, and then he becomes a billionaire by the afternoon, and he's rejoicing and happy. And then by the evening time, the stockbroker calls him back, and he tells him that actually the company went under. It used to be sort of a funny story, but now it's like what you hear about all the time. And then all of a sudden he's broke, and he doesn't have anything left. And he said, our life in the material world's like that. No matter how far you get ahead at the time of death, you sarva hadashchaham. Krishna comes and he takes away everything, and then you end up broke again. So why do you invest so much in that? Jesus said something about don't invest here in this world, but you know, what is it? Is there? Oh, can you say it in the microphone? It's a really nice verse.
Yeah, that's what I remember.
Yeah, say it again.
One should lay up, don't lay up treasures on earth, but lay up your treasures in heaven.
Yeah. Don't lay up your treasures on earth, but lay up your treasures in heaven. And really, and as Krishna says in the 16th chapter of the Gita about Daivi Sampat, those who are godly, they're looking to increase this, you know, the spiritual treasure, and it increases and increases. Described by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu de Rupa Goswami that we have this creeper. And by watering the creeper of devotional service, and it grows and grows, and it eventually goes into the spiritual world, and it entangles itself at the lotus feet of Krishna. And even while you're living here in this world, still you're engaged in the spiritual world. But he says that watering process, shravanadi jal, it's the water of hearing and chanting, has to go on. Because if you stop, then the creeper will dry up also. But that's where real wealth comes from. And there's another verse that talks about how, and I'm not sure where this verse is from, but it says that just as a miserly person counts and recounts his wealth every day and rejoices in how much he has, that a devotee counts and recounts the verses that he's collecting from the Shastra. Each one is like a valuable gem. You know, looking at it, turning it over, observing it again and again, and then collecting more and becoming greedy for these things. This is really the wealth of the devotees, what he's getting from Shastra and, you know, this stock of spiritual wealth. You were going to say?
Actually, I had a question for the learned assembly. Mm-hmm. That pretty much everyone has to go through some endeavor to make money to support themselves, and Krishna also says you can't even sustain your body without work. So we're all endeavoring. Nobody's endeavoring to lose money, I don't think. So where does that cross over the line from getting one's quota or cutting into the endeavoring to get something that actually belongs to someone else? It seems like, I mean, even the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they worked to get money. Some of them were wealthy. Kulavate Sridhar was very poor, but he also had his occupation. So there appears to be some natural endeavor for maintaining one's existence, at least, and it doesn't appear that everyone who has a lot of wealth, for instance, is necessarily sinful. Yudhishthira Maharaj was not sinful. So, but where is, you know, I guess you could say, how do you know what is a quota, or where are you cutting and endeavoring for something that belongs to
someone. I hope everybody heard that, because he's asking the learned assembly. I mean, we're going to be depending on you to answer his question. Did you get that? Did everybody get that? Kishore got it? Did everybody hear what he said? Okay. Do you mind asking it one more time? A little closer, Mike. There you go.
We should accept what is set aside as our quota and not accept other things, or not endeavor for the wealth of others. I think that comes out in the... Yeah, but also it says here that... anyway, one shouldn't endeavor for the wealth of others. I think that comes out in the... Because if it's not our quota, then it's somebody else's quota. Mm-hmm. So we're endeavoring for someone else's work. So, but we're endeavoring to make money to sustain ourselves. So where is the line drawn between our endeavoring naturally for our quota and cutting into somebody else's quota? Where does that...
Okay.
Where is that?
Bana?
The line is drawn at our ability to engage those things in Krishna's service.
Thank you. Learned Assembly? Bhakti Leon?
Yeah, I was like sitting along similar lines. I was just thinking, Yudhishthira Maharaj, he performed the Rajasuya sacrifice so that he owned like so many things, but then he engaged it all for everyone's benefit and to please Krishna. So the moment we try and use things, like in that sense, you could almost own the entire world and it'd still be fine. But if you start using even like a little thing for your own sense gratification, then straight away you'll get into trouble. So it's, I don't know.
Okay. You have a point? Kishore. Hare Krishna.
Rupa Goswami had given practical instructions on how to actually spend your earnings so that you got your quota. Like, for example, if you were situated in a particular occupation, somehow or the other by Krishna's grace, you spend 50% of that for development of Krishna consciousness movement or charity to persons who are involved in Krishna consciousness. And then 25% for your urgent necessities and 25% for relatives or other obligations that you've got. So as long as you're working or doing something and earning and spending your quota like this, then it can be said that you're following the quota system as it is mentioned here.
For wealth, yes. Thank you very much. Nice point, very practical. Prabhuji, in the back.
There are two points. One is the question which I will ask later, and one is the quota system which we have. And there is a very interesting example is with the human life. In the human life, a person always keep thinking that he should earn more. He should earn more. He desire for a lot of things. Always desire, and he keep doing a lot of effort to achieve what he has think that okay, I want to earn this much money, or I want to earn this much, this property or anything. And this happened with my own life itself. Like I wanted to get one property, one amount of land, and I worked a lot for that. I was just thinking that okay, I will get it. But I never got any chance to do that. But this God have created this kind of quota system that you do whatever you do, but when the time, right time will come, you suddenly meet with somebody. You suddenly meet something, you suddenly get some idea, you suddenly get anything, and within some days, you will get what you wanted to. If you are not supposed to, you will never get it. And the very same happened with me. I tried a lot, nothing happened. And one day, I was just taking a bath, and I got some idea. And within 2 or 3 days, everything got mature, and I got what I wanted to achieve. So this is all quota. And so my father-in-law, once he told me that, God have some kind of lottery system, basically. So when the right time will come, you will get your lottery. If there is no right time come, God have not kept a lottery for you, you will never get it. You try as much hard you can do, you will never get it. Because that's kind of lottery he has created for you. It's kind of bank deposits he has kept for your life, entire life of 60 years, 70 years, and he know when to give the lottery to the person, and he get it. But the question which I want to ask to the whole audience is, like we say that there is a certain quota which is required, like how much money I need to live. Let's say $2,000, maybe that much is sufficient for me, for my family to run, and everything is fine for their education. But my question is, when we know that this much is the quota required, but still after that there is a lot of disparity. There are some people who are very rich, there are very, very poor, they don't have basic necessity. Then why God have this kind of system where somebody is having 10 times or 1,000 times of more than what they actually require, and somebody are just hungry, they are very poor. So why is the God lazy? That's why he could not control all this thing? or he has created this, he want the whole universe like that, so that people can understand the difference of goodness and kind of badness, that how can be. Then only people will understand what is good and what is bad. Why this imbalance is there when we know that the quota required for one person is just maybe $2,000 sufficient?
Thank you for your comment and your question. We discussed earlier about this point for those who were here at 5 p.m. We started talking about these points. Does anybody remember? There was a definite answer to this question about living entities in this world and how there may be some disparity, but is it God's arrangement that the living entities live either at a high standard or a low standard? That was the point. Okay, so he's saying, Sheetala is saying it's the law of karma. So, well, let's give an example. If a high court judge gives out a sentence to somebody and says, okay, you go free, and then the next guy comes up and he says, and you go to jail for 10 years. And then someone says, why is the judge doing that? In other words, you know, is he being partial to one? Or is there something else at play? And he gave this idea of karma. So what is it? Whose fault is it? And who that one gets free and the other one goes 10 years in jail? Is it the judge that's doing that? Microphone.
I just wanted to make the point that, and it may apply to the determination of the judge, and that depends on something called sukriti, or pious credits that one has. Being in a mode of goodness, and karma applies even in past life, one has accumulated this sukriti, pious credits, and so in the present life, one may be very wealthy because of those credits that have been accumulated. Not that those credits are going to last eternally. The person may exhaust them after a while. But at a given point, one may be wealthy and the other may not be, based on their pious credits. And in the case of the judge making the ruling, he may look upon the degree of one's involvement in a bad act in order to make the type of decision that is doing. So the mode of goodness, again, may apply.
Okay, we'll get back to that, but do you have some verse to prove your point about karma and how it gets exhausted?
There is, I cannot recall right away, but there are verses in the Bhagavad Gita, I believe, where it is said that those who may do austerities or sacrifices may earn credits to go to heavenly planets, but once those credits are exhausted, they fall down in the material world.
Okay, getting close. Where is it? Yes. That's from the Bhagavatam. Shinye punye martyalokam vishante evam trai dharmam anu prapana gata gata kama kama labante. These verses are in the 9th chapter, you'll find there. You can all look them up. where Krishna talks about how this cycle of karma is like, I always think of it as like frequent flyer miles, because, you know, you fly with a certain airline and you get on their premier program, and then they can give you upgrades. And once you have an upgrade, you definitely don't want to go back to coach. But you use them up as you fly, and then you have to go back there into the coach. So same thing, the material world has gradations. 9:21. There's two verses in a row. What's the page number?
Page
425 in the Bhagavad Gita. So let's chant 20 and 21. Page 424, 425. Trividyamam soma paputa papa jagnyar ishva swargatim prartayante te punyamasadya sarendra lokam ashnanti divyanti videva bogan. Those who study the Vedas and drink the soma juice, sinking the heavenly planets, worship me indirectly. Purified of sinful reactions, they take birth on the pious heavenly planet of Indra, where they enjoy godly delights. 21. Te tam bhuktva swargatim vishanlam shinye punye martalokam vishanti evam tri dharmam anuprapana gatagatam kama kama labante. When they have thus enjoyed vast heavenly sense pleasure, and the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they return to this mortal planet again. Thus, those who seek sense enjoyment by adhering to the principles of the three Vedas achieve only repeated birth and death. Let's read the next one too. Ananyas chintayanto mam yejana paryupasate tesham nityabdi yuktanam yoga kshemam bahamyaham. But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. Back to the high court judge. He's giving out rulings, but it's according to the law. So Shito mentioned karma. It's a law. And in the material universe, when you break the law or when you observe the tenets of the law, then you're either rewarded or you're punished. And the judge simply gives out the reward or punishment. So is it the fault of the judge or is it the fault of the person who's receiving the sentence, if the law is fair, and if the judge is fair? Use the microphone, please. Yeah, but it broadcasts out to the middle unit, across the universe.
I will ask one question. Like, in this life, let's say I'm a liquor tycoon. I'm making liquor and I'm selling it in the market, and I'm a very rich person. So what do you call me? I'm earning a lot of good money. I'm earning a lot of money. Then is it because of my good karma or it is because of my bad karma?
Well, this is answered in. Yeah.
Should I answer?
Okay.
Because why I'm asking this question? Yeah. What is happening in this case? I'm earning a good money, right? I'm a very rich person. So that way somebody will say, okay, because you did a very good karma, that's why you are earning a lot of money. But at the same time, what I'm doing is the liquor which I'm selling out of my business is killing a lot of people. And yeah. I am finally earning a lot of negative miles. I'm losing a lot of miles of these good karmas. So next life, probably I will be, may not be, get the human life. Maybe I will be just like one of those person. So what
so, yeah, you are
I am in
self-answering,
life?
Yeah. Just very short and sweet example is like, have you been to a village where they have a big silos of grains? Like one season you have a high class grain, second season you may have a bad one. If somebody is looking at that, a little boy, he will be surprised that, oh, this person has poured just a pretty ratchet quality grains and pretty high class is coming from the bottom. What is this? This is a kind of a magical silo. What do you think about that? Same thing happens in karma also. As you self-answered that you are preparing for your next move, which is going to be miserable. That's what the answer is that whatever you have done in past life, you are enjoying that, but you are enjoying in the wrong way. So that's the check one should make, that are they operating as per the shastras? Are they operating as per the Krishna's instructions? So if that is the yes, then you are on a right track.
But there is a very controversy, right? If you have done very good in the past, then only you get a lot of money. But if you have not done very good in the past, that's why you are making sin, producing liquor and killing a lot of people or whatever it is.
Well, so, first of all, whether you believe it or not, we are all here. This is Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam. This is a jail. It's unfortunate that we believe that this is a place of pleasure. It's not. We were with Krishna as a living entity, individual living entity. Since we desired, just the desire to enjoy separately, that's why we are all here. And that's a hard fact. So the time and energy should be invested in such a way that we go back to him because he is waiting for us as eagerly as that. If we are busy making liquor, money and all that, it's all wrong. So our loving Father is waiting for us and we need to work in that direction. These are all detours. You can take as many. And it's life after life. Janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi will keep coming. No matter you are a millionaire or a billionaire or a trillionaire, it will be there. So it's a very, very important question. One should satisfy himself or herself pretty precisely that what is the focus of the life.
There's a story, karma is very complicated, and there's a story in the Srimad Bhagavatam about a king named Riga. And Riga had it figured out how karma works, because he was called a karmakandi. Some people, they figure out how the material world works. And so he knew that by doing charity work, especially giving to Brahmins, that he would get pious credits. And he went about that work with great gusto, and he gave away lots and lots of charity. And he did all kinds of pious works. He gave away millions and millions of cows to Brahmins, qualified Brahmins. There's a discrepancy in his charity because he gave away a herd of cows to one Brahmin. One of the cows wandered back into his herd, and then he gave another herd away, but one of the cows from the other herd had been combined. And the Brahmin who had received the first cow noticed it and said, "Wait a minute, that's my cow." And the other Brahmin said, "No, but he gave me this herd." And he said, and they got in an argument. And because of that discrepancy in his charity, when he died, he was given a choice when he was judged, according to his pious credits and his sinful credits, or not credits, but demerits, that which one do you want first? And being an expert karmakandi, he said, "Well, I'll take the demerits first, because how many can there be anyway? And then also I'll use those up, and then I can enjoy pretty much unlimitedly." So when he took the demerits, he ended up taking the body of a lizard because of his discrepancy in giving charity and taking something back from a Brahmin that he had already given. Later he was liberated by Lord Krishna, whose children found him at the bottom of a well, and then Krishna came and pulled him out. And by the touch of the Lord, he became purified. But one of the points of the story is how complicated karma is, and also, more importantly, how this idea of karmakanda, or the karma that we have in the material world, if we're fending for ourselves, we're not taking shelter of Lord Krishna, then anything can happen in this material world. Therefore, Krishna says, "Sarva dharman parityaja mamekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papi mukshai shami masuchaha." That surrender to me, because it's like people nowadays, you know, they get in so much debt and it becomes so complicated, all these different kinds of loans and things like that. And they get so far behind that there's nothing they can do except cut their losses and go throw themselves on the mercy of the court, and declare bankruptcy and say, I give up, save me. Otherwise, they'll be just swallowed alive practically by the creditors and all this debt. So similarly, we accumulate debt throughout our sojourn in the material world. And ultimately, it becomes so complicated that Krishna says, just surrender to me, and I'll deliver you, I'll absolve you from all this debt. The devotee who's surrendering to Krishna is mentioned by Karabhajana Muni, Devarshi Bhutapnandrinam Pitrinam Nakinkoro Nayam Ranicharajan Sarvatmanaya Sharanam Sharanyam Kutomukuntam Parihritakartam. He says that automatically along with your birth, no matter if you're rich or poor, you're still a debtor, because everything that we have is coming from the grace of God and coming through all his representatives. And he names the devas, the rishis, the living entities. There's all kinds of living entities that give us service. Nowadays, many of the products and things that we have, they come about by the labor of animals, and some of the animals are even killed, you know, for the sake of us living. And then there's forefathers, there's our mothers and fathers. So many people give us life and sustenance, and we owe them. We're rini, we're debtors. But if someone surrenders to Krishna, then he or she no longer becomes a debtor. Sarvatmanaya sharanam sharanyam gato mukundam parihritakartam. So the solution, although it's complicated, the material world is very complicated, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sanatana Goswami that our life here is like a person who is being punished. There was an ancient punishment called waterboarding, which Dick Cheney brought back into popularity recently, which the king would take somebody and put them on a board and then dunk them in the water and then bring them back up for a little bit of air and then put them back down again. And Lord Chaitanya said that our so-called happiness in this world is like when we're brought up for air and we get a gasp of air, and then we take that relief to be some kind of happiness. Then immediately we're plunged back again underneath. So from these verses in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that we're getting some kind of pious credit, but then again it gets used up and passed on. And sometimes we see that somebody's a very rich person going on with impunity in his enjoyment. So Prabhupada talks about that in the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam with the story of Hiranyakashipu. And when Lord Nrisingadev fought with Hiranyakashipu, at first he grabbed him, and then Hiranyakashipu got free again. And the demigods were looking on with aghast because they thought, oh no, if he can't kill him, he's going to come back and be twice as angry at us, Hiranyakashipu, who was already dominating the demigods. So just like a cat, sometimes, any of you ever lived around a cat before? Yeah? Did you ever catch a mouse? Yeah, they play with it, right? I had cats when I was a kid. They catch the mouse, and they don't just eat it or something, you know, but they play with it for about an hour, let it go, and then they jump after it again, and they grab it. So Prabhupada says that Hiranyakashipu was just like that. He was like the mouse being played with by Lord Nrisingadev, who caught him and then let him go and then caught him again. And so my point is this, that Prabhupada says sometimes a materialist looks like he's really enjoying, and somebody might say, well, look, he's a sinful person through and through, but he's enjoying this material world like anything. But look at you sadhus, you know, you barely have enough to eat. And of course, that's not the case here, but, you know, someone might say that, you know, you're not enjoying the material world at all, but this sinful person is. And, you know, so where's your God? Where's the, what's the problem? But in the end, of course, Hiranyakashipu was killed by Lord Nrisingadev. And in the end, the sinful person, although it may appear that he has some kind of good thing going in the material world, he'll be slaughtered by the laws of material nature, which are going on inexorably. And are meted out to everybody. So it may appear that somebody's enjoying and they're sinful, but they will reap the result of their karma in the end. So one should take to spiritual life. Yesham tvam takatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te tvam mohanir mukta bhajantimam dridavrta. Krishna says, when you come to the end of this sinful kind of life, which means anything other than the Ishavasya spirit that we're talking about, which means forgetting that things belong to Krishna, it doesn't matter. Even if somebody's a poor person, if they're trying to usurp the energy of the Lord, then they'll be considered sinful and they have to suffer from that. But when somebody comes to the end of that, surrenders to Krishna and becomes free from sinful life, which means to use everything in Krishna's service, then he can go on with determination in spiritual life, dridavrata, and be happy, as Sheetal Prabhu was saying, that this is our goal in life, to go back to the spiritual world. This place is temporary and miserable. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam, he quoted, that it's the dukkhalayam. The alayam means it's a place, like the bhojanalai. You go to the bhojanalai to have full belly prasadam, sit down and you get all the chapatis you want for, you know, 5 rupees or something like that. And in the dukkhalayam, you come here and get your full fill of misery, because it's all dukkha. Dukkhalayam. Where are you going? I'm going to the Dukkhalayam. Uh-oh. Not very good. Nobody knows it, though. You think, oh, it's a place of happiness, but it's a big mistake. So to have that knowledge of karma and how it's working, Krishna gives it in the Bhagavad Gita, and it's important to know that. And he says, you know, you should know what's karma, what's vikarma, what's akarma. Know these things. Vikarma is just running blind. Like if you take off down the 280 or the 101 and you blindfold yourself, you're going to be in serious shape. You're going to end up in a wreck. And that's what material life ends up in a wreck. Because you're blind. You don't know where you're going and you think, oh, this is good for me. Bhanabhata Prabhu, during the Vyasa Puja, he gave this example. He said, sometimes if someone sees a fish out of water and the fish flaps, you know, and someone might think, oh, he's happy. And so someone might see people moving in the material world in a certain way and think, oh, they're enjoying or something like that. But it's just like a fish out of water. If you don't know that actually he's flapping because he's trying to get some oxygen through his gills and he's not getting any and he's suffering, then you're mistaken. He needs to be back in the water, then he'll become happy. And all the movements on the material platform are just that kind of flapping. And until we actually come back in the water of Krishna consciousness, then there's no satisfaction from any kind of pious or impious life. It's all suffering from top to bottom. Brahma bhuvana loka punar avartino arjuna mamupetya tu kunteya punar janmana vidyate, Krishna says. Take it from the top to the bottom. From Brahma loka down to Patala loka, every place you find in the material world, it's going to be a suffering place. So don't put your wealth here. And that gives us great determination to hear those things from Krishna, because what he says is true, and it's for our benefit. And if we take it and become determined by hearing his words that there's nothing here for me, then we'll go on. I mean, we do have to go on working, because you have to have some kind of sustenance here. And there's not, you know, you can't artificially just give up everything, and you can't let your family starve and do something like that. But as Prahlad Maharaj says, you should understand while you're working, while you're getting whatever you get, it's all coming by the mercy of Krishna. Balasya neha sharanam pitaro nishingha nartasya chagana mudanvati majatonyo taptasya tat prativivir yaihanjateshas tavadvibo tanubitam twadupekshitanam. Upekshita, upeksha means if someone's neglectful. So he said, if the Lord is neglectful towards you in your life, then there's nothing you can do that will help you. And if you're a parent and you're trying to protect your children, if the Lord's not in favor of it, it's not going to happen. If you're trying to save a drowning person and you bring a big boat and all the right rescue equipment, if the Lord doesn't sanction it, it won't happen. And if you take medicine when you're sick, if it's not sanctioned by the Lord, you won't be cured. And you can test that yourself by going to the doctor next time you go. if you're lucky enough to have health insurance, you can go to the doctor and say, you know, I have this disease. Can you help me? Can you absolutely guarantee that you'll cure me? And he'll say, I'll do my best. That's all he can do. He'll give it a shot. You probably get sicker, actually, is what Prahlad says in a different place, is that the medicine is usually, a lot of times it's worse than the disease itself. It'll make you probably sicker. You go to the hospital, you get sick. And what? And poor. You lose your money. Insult to injury, that's called. And so the end result is that Prabhupada mentions there, it's not that then you just throw up your hands and say, then I won't try to protect my children, or I won't take medicine, or I won't try to save somebody with a boat when they're drowning on the water. But we do all those things, but understand that it will only be successful if the Lord sanctions it. And if he's neglectful, then there's nothing I can do about it. So we're getting ready for the Artik, and after the Artik we'll have more bhajans, and then there'll be prasadam, and then there'll be more bhajans. We have a few more minutes, and any reflections back about anything that we talked about since the beginning? Could you take the... Thank you.
As soon as you get the transcendental knowledge, you just get rid of all these karma and reactions, right? Even if it's a bias activity or the bad karmas, you come in... So you don't get any reaction for that. And also, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, like, every morning when you wake up, you say, Krishna, I'm offering my karma and my the fruit of my karma onto your lotus feet. So you don't get accumulated all these karmas from that point onwards. Right?
That's a question?
I mean, yeah, I'm asking you.
The question is, does, if we're surrendered to Krishna, do we become free from karma? Is that the question? Once you get transcendental knowledge, are you free from karma? Is that the question?
Yeah.
There's a verse in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that says that the fire of transcendental knowledge, which is called Jnana Agni, it will burn to ashes all the results of all your... Srinivas is back. Haribo! He looks like a sage, too. It's Vyasadeva. Hare Krishna. Good to see you. We could look up this verse. He says in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he mentions the Jnana Agni, that the Jnana Agni will burn to ashes all the karma that's supplied to it. So the answer to that is yes. If one's situated in transcendental knowledge, also he says, api cherasi papebhya sarvibhya papakritama. Even if you're papakritama, you're considered to be the most sinful of all sinners. If you're situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, you can cross beyond. Kishore, can you give us the Basmasat verse? Which verse do you have? 36. 436. 230. Huh? Page 236? 266. Page 266. 366. If we can get you this verse, we'll be lucky. Okay, page number is? 236?
37.
Okay, let's look at it. Page 236. Okay, I'll say it, then please repeat. It's on page 236, text 37. Yatai tamsi samikdo gnir. Basmasat kurate arjuna gnagni sarva karmani basmasat kurate tata yata just as idamsi firewood samida blazing agni fire basmasat ashes kurate turns Arjuna. Arjuna. O Arjuna, Arjuna. Jnana Agni, the fire of knowledge. The fire of knowledge. Sarva Karmani, all reactions to material activities. Basmasad to ashes. Kurute, it turns. Tata, similarly. Translation. As a blazing fire turns firewood to ashes, O Arjuna, so does the fire of knowledge burn to ashes all reactions to material activities. Purport. Perfect knowledge of self and superself and of their relationship is compared herein to fire. This fire not only burns up all reactions to impious activities, but also all reactions to pious activities, turning them to ashes. There are many stages of reaction. Reaction in the making, reaction fructifying, reaction already achieved, and action, reaction a priori. But knowledge of the constitutional position of the living entity burns everything to ashes. When one is complete, incomplete knowledge, all reactions, both a priori and a posteriori, are consumed. In the Vedas, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, it is stated, Ube uhavaishe eti taranti amrita swad asadhuni. One overcomes both the pious and the impious reactions of work. Does that answer your question?